Although Michael J. Agovino's father had a desk job with the city welfare department for 40 years, it was his other jobs as a bookmaker and a gambler that allowed the family to travel to Italy, Morocco, and Spain. On the other hand, it was his addiction to gambling that didn't allow the family to leave the house they wanted to leave in the Bronx. Michael J. Agovino looks back on the good and the bad of his unusual family in a new memoir from HarperCollins called The Bookmaker, a memoir of money, luck, and family from the outskirts of New York City. I'm very pleased to welcome him to the show. Hi.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you so much for having me.
When did you first become aware that your father had an unusual double, or maybe I should say triple life? Or did it seem just that's the way things are?
Exactly. Just from a very young age, I just always knew this was part of our, part of the family makeup. Whether it was, you know, watching a ball game and knowing my father had, you know, to root for a certain team, or, you know, him leaving the dinner table at 6:30 to answer the phones for his bookmaking business, I just sort of always knew.
Did the bookmaking grow out of the gambling?
Yes. Originally, my father's from East Harlem, which was the biggest Italian-American sort of ghetto in America. He was born in 1927, so he started gambling first before I was born. And then when he needed extra...
Was he successful?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, it's always an ebb and flow with gamblers, but he did have some big winnings. He went on some big streaks. And when he had two kids and he needed to supplement his income, he fell back on what he knew, and he started a sort of a mom-and-pop bookmaking business.
At the same time, he was working at the welfare department. This sounds like an exhausting schedule.
It was. He was up very early in the morning, and he liked his job at the welfare department. He became friends with Romar Bearden, the great African-American mm-hmm. collagist, who also worked there till he retired. And he was home every day at 5:30, and we had dinner together around the table. He wasn't a boozer or a drinker. He wasn't a womanizer. He was a present father and a strict father.
Most bookmakers try not to gamble because mm-hmm. it eats into the profits.
Exactly. You know, there's an old saying, the bookmaker always wins. They have the VIG, which is short for vigorish, which I believe is a Yiddish word for earnings or winnings. And that's their commission. And they are supposed to always win. But he, and you're right, most bookmakers don't gamble. He did. I hate the analogy, but it's sort of like, because my father so was against narcotics and drugs, but it would sort of be like a drug pusher who also used.
How well did he do as a bookmaker?
You know, at times very well. In the 70s, when professional football really became this kind of a drug in itself, in a way.
So people would bet on everything with him. It wasn't just the horses or baseball.
Mainly pro football. That's where he made most of his money, frankly. And, you know, he did well often, as I write. You know, we went to some fabulous places.
Well, how do you even establish a business like that? Do you go around and tell people, hey, I'm taking bets on this Sunday's football games?
Like I said, it started at his job at the welfare department, and he just started picking up customers. People sort of gravitated towards him. So they sort of sensed that he had he knew how to maneuver through this world, and they sort of came to him with their business saying, hey, do you know where I could place a bet? And one thing led to the other, as I say, and business just sort of came to him. And then people tell their friends, and he had mainly a lot of affluent clients, actually. So, you know, word got around. And
was he ever worried about being arrested?
He wasn't. He wasn't. I think we were a little bit, but he never was.
What about the IRS? A lot of money changed hands.
Yes.
And he wasn't worried about the IRS?
You know, he actually did taxes as a third job, even
around.
Another
job.
Yeah, around. A friend of his had a tax return business, and he actually helped him with this. And he did, even people in our building or family and friends, he would do tax returns. And he wouldn't charge people. He would just, they would pay him whatever they thought, you know, was fair.
Well, it sounds like your father had a good head for numbers, and yet he didn't go to college. Why?
Right, exactly. This is a big part of the book, the first section. He went to Stuyvesant High School, and he was very bright. And after the war, World War II, he should have gone to college. He was accepted to Colgate, or at least that's what he tells us, and he didn't go. He was enamored with the streets, and he was close with his family, and he turned this he didn't go in this direction, which he admits was a huge mistake because he was good with numbers. He was very erudite. He loved reading and art and film, which I detail in the book. So he was an underachiever, which was a shame.
What about your mother? What was her relationship with your father like? They're both alive still,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes, knock wood.
And later I wonder what their reaction to your writing this mm-hmm. book has been.
Sure. Well, the relationship, it was stormy at times. But like my mother says now, you know, what marriage is perfect. And she always wanted a house in the suburbs. She believed in ownership in suburbia, and my father didn't. He believed in renting. He believed in cities. He didn't drive a car.
But you're in Co-op City.
Right.
Now, Co-op City is co-ops, isn't it? So you own the apartment, don't you?
Right, Leonard, but it's Mitchell Lama, so it's limited profit. You can't sell it. It doesn't fluctuate with the market value. So,
and it's a place where some people find a real sense of community, but not your family. There was, in fact, there was almost a desire to remain outside.
Yeah, I mean, my father had more of an affinity for it because he was a union man, and he grew up in Vito Marcantonio's district in East Harlem. Vito Marcantonio was a socialist congressman, famously, and so he believed in unions. He had more of an affinity for the place than my mom did, but again, my mom always wanted to get out and wanted home ownership.
But she also was very aware of being an Italian American in a big housing development where there weren't a lot. She once told you that she'd never voted.
That's right.
Because as an Italian American, she felt like she had no real voice in the electoral process?
I think that was part of it. You know, she especially disliked John Lindsay because, and I try to find this quote, she said, yeah, Lindsay called Italians base people at one point. I haven't been able to find this, but she particularly...
It doesn't sound like something Lindsay would have said.
Well, he was... I mean, wasn't he a classist, though? He did seem...
I don't know. He was that good liberal from the Upper East Side.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big rent strike at Co-op City in 1975. Did your parents support the strike?
No, they didn't, actually.
Even though your father was a good union guy?
Right, but they felt like, you know, Co-op City, even though a lot of people who moved there were fervent about it at the beginning, they started leaving right away. And by 75, it was literally crumbling, the place. It wasn't well built. And my parents thought that if, you know, the carrying charges went up, that maybe, you know, some of the good people would stay. So they did not support the strike, and they were in the minority. 80% of the people supported the strike.
My guest is Michael J. Agovino, and his memoir is called The Bookmaker, a memoir of money, luck, and family from the utopian outskirts of New York City, published by Harper. So you went on these vacations that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your mother wanted to get out of Co-op City. Why didn't she just insist that your father put the money for those vacations toward buying a house?
She tried, but he just was not a saver, and she realized this after, you know, a time, that he just was not a saver, and that she just had to enjoy, live life in the moment and enjoy it for what it was. And she even referred to these vacations often as consolation prizes.
Where did you go?
The first trip, of course, was Italy in 1973, and then Spain, Portugal, Morocco in 76, England, Holland, 79. You know, it was France in 84.
All financed by his earnings as a bookmaker?
Mostly.
And there was no worry that the IRS might put two and two together?
Well, he reported a lot of it.
Obviously they didn't arrest him.
Right.
How did the other kids at Co-op City react when you told them what you had been doing those summers?
Mostly there was no reaction. There's one chapter that I open with in the third grade where, some kid blurts out, you know, is your father in the mafia or something? And, you know, I told my mother that, and she threw a fit. But usually people didn't ask questions because in Co-op City it wasn't a judgmental place, and a lot of people had their own things going on. So,
but still, you remain relatively outside of it because your parents believed that you shouldn't be joiners.
Yeah, she did believe that.
How did this all come about? She'd been born in the United States. She wasn't
Her parents were born in
an
Brooklyn,
immigrant.
Too. Right. She was just very individualistic. She didn't, even the Catholic Church, she went to Catholic schools, but she didn't believe in Catholic schools. And we didn't go to church. We weren't part of even that. And she was just, she was an individualist.
She was also very aware of being an Italian-American, and that made her feel like even more of an outsider?
I think a little. I think she was also conflicted, ambivalent about her background. I think she didn't want to raise us in an Italian neighborhood. She was adamant about that. She didn't want to send us to Catholic school. She was adamant about that. So she wasn't nostalgic for her Italian neighborhood in Brooklyn, which was Bushwick. But she was very much defined by that background, too.
And, of course, this is a time when we're seeing all these movies like The Godfather, which are also defining what an Italian-American is all about for most Americans.
Right. And they were film buffs, as you've read. They like The Godfather movies as pieces, as artworks, and they love all art. But that didn't bother them. I mean, they recognized that the mafia was, it's part of our history. As much as some Italians want to expunge that from our history, you can't really. It's a small part of our history, but it's part of our history. So,
can you talk about the Bensonhurst incident?
Well, I've never even been to Bensonhurst. But when that happened, the first thing my father said was, "Oh, God, I hope it's not Italian kids," because...
And then it turned out to be Italian kids.
Mainly, yeah. And, Pete Hamill, who we loved, actually, he was one of us. He was a native New Yorker, and he wrote a very vicious column in the New York Post at the time. And we were hurt by that. And we forgave Pete Hamill, because at the end, he's still a great New Yorker and a proud New Yorker. But that hurt us. And, of course, what those kids did was monstrous. And... it was just a bad time in New York.
You grew up thinking about sports all the time, I'm sure. How aware were you of the odds and who might win a game and what that might mean to your father's income?
Yeah, a great story is, I grew up a Mets fan, even though I was from the Bronx. A lot of Mets fans lived in,
And a Minnesota Vikings
fan. Yes, which was odd. But as far as the Mets go, I love the Mets. That was my team, my childhood team.
You speak in the past. Is it the past two seasons have changed?
No, not really. It was back to 86, and my dad needed Boston. And he needed Boston in a big, big way. And, of course, Game 6, as I describe it, was our stock market crash.
So Mookie Wilson is a villain in your life. And
I still love Mookie, but after that, my relationship with the Mets was never the same because I felt like they almost betrayed my father.
And what about the Minnesota Vikings? Why that team of all the teams in the NFL?
That was just a fluky thing. I mean, they lost the Super Bowl, one of the Super Bowls, to the Raiders, I think Super Bowl 10 or 11, and I sort of felt bad for them. And I like Fran Tarkenton, the purple uniforms.
People who grow up in families where there's a lot of alcohol either become alcoholics or become teetotalers. Mm-hmm. What about growing up in a gambling family?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully I don't gamble, and I'm not really tempted to gamble. I mean, I'll play a horse for a big horse race, but just like anyone else, for a Triple Crown race. But yeah, I've been quite aware. Even stocks I'm afraid of, to tell you the truth.
Well, do you think that this history and all of the thinking about odds and what's ahead and what's behind has given you insight into the current financial crisis?
Well, I mean, my father always said, and I thought as a kid that he was just making excuses, but he used to say, the stock market is gambling, and it's the same thing. And we thought, oh, come on, he just doesn't want to invest, or he doesn't have the money to invest. But I find out this is true, in a sense.
Well, I'm assuming that he's no longer engaged in illicit activities.
No, otherwise.
You couldn't have written this book.
Right.
Are they happy that you wrote this book? Because they don't always come across as ideal parents, ideal Americans.
Well, what's an ideal American, though? I mean,
well, your mother could have voted at least in one or two elections.
Well, she did. She voted against John Lindsay. My mother's very private. I think she's reading the book now. My father, I even asked him at one point, last year, Susan Sonnenberg wrote a book, a memoir, and she changed everyone's name, even her parents' name. So I even said to my dad, I think I'll be able to change your name if you want me to. He said, no, I've read it. I'm not ashamed of the way I lived, and I'm fine with it.
And what does he do now to make a couple of extra bucks?
No, he's just retired, and he hasn't done this in 20 years or so. He, lives quietly and goes to movies and listens to Ellington and Basie, as he always did.
How did you wind up becoming a writer in this environment?
Well, it's something my father actually always encouraged, because he always had books in the house, kind of these very intimidating academic books, especially history books. And it was something I started to show some interest in college at NYU, and I was told I was decent at it. And, I wasn't good at math. I didn't have the talent with numbers like my dad did. So this is what I went into.
Michael J. Agovino has written for a wide range of publications and online sites, including The New York Times, Esquire, GQ, Salon, Elle, and The New York Observer. And his memoir is called The Bookmaker, a memoir of money, luck, and family from the utopian outskirts of New York City, published by Harper. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Leonard, thank you so much for having me.